The passage that I was asked to work on tonight is in Matthew chapter 19, and it's a corresponding chapter in Mark chapter 10. Matthew chapter 19 and Mark chapter 10. I'm going to try to read out of a harmony of the Gospels, so they're side by side, and I won't read both passages that way, but I'll read the parts that are different as I work through here. And hopefully I can get this so it the chronology of the passage between the two authors maybe is more clear. And it isn't critical, but it may help. Okay, we'll start with in Matthew, and it's very similar where I stop. It'll be because it's a little different. It came about that when Jesus had finished these words, he departed from Galilee and came into the region of Judea beyond the Jordan. And great multitudes followed him there, and he healed them there. And in the passage in Mark, it says, and he once more began to teach. And some Pharisees came to him, testing him. I'm back in Matthew. Follow Matthew, and I'll jump over to Mark from time to time. And some Pharisees came to him, testing him, and saying, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any cause at all? And he answered and said, and over in the other passage, they came up to testing, began to question, lawful to divorce him, for a man to divorce his wife. And he answered and said to them, what did Moses command you? And they said, Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and send her away. And they were working from Deuteronomy chapter 24, 1 through 4 is where that's located. So back over to the other in Matthew. Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female? And he said, for this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Consequently, they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. Now there's a little bit in Mark that's just slightly different, because he comes right out and says in Mark, Moses permitted a man, notice it's permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and send her away. That's what they said. But Jesus said to them, because of your hardness of heart, he wrote to you this commandment. So they develop it just slightly, but slightly differently, but they're going to get to the same place. We're in verse 8 in Mark. Or in I've stopped in verse 8, also in, or 6 rather, in Matthew. They said to him, picking it back up in Matthew, why then did Moses command to give her a certificate of divorce and send her away? Notice there's a change there from command to permission. From a command to permission. As usual, when Jesus went someplace, the Pharisees went along with one goal in mind, which was to try to trap him, to try to get him on one side or the other side of an issue, where the leadership was divided and the people of the Jewish people were divided, so that they could get him, make him fit into different camps, and then come with an accusation against him, or if not an accusation, at least have this side is not supporting or this side is supporting. So they were trying to create a divide in the group and line up Jesus' disciples. What did Jesus do? He pointed them to their own law, and he said, "What does it say?" And they kind of take it out of context and they leave it that way. So he makes it clear that it's not the way they did it. He's in verse 8 now. And he said to them, because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it has not been this way. Has not. Hasn't changed. Noticed? Didn't change. Stayed the same. Has not been this way. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, and except for immorality, and marries another woman, commits adultery. The disciples said to him, if the relationship of a man with his wife is like this, it is better not to marry. You can see the picture that even the disciples had in those days, which is now, I would say, a common picture here in America, where I've heard as much as 67% of marriages end up in divorce. 2/3 are ending up in divorce. Hey, if I can't get rid of this woman, I don't want to marry her in the first place. That's what the disciples were saying. They were in the house. That's what you pick up in chapter 10 of Mark. right after he says, let no man separate. In verse 10, he says, and in the house, the scripture says, and in the house, the disciples began questioning him again about this. So it's the disciples actually asking the question here. We've moved beyond the Pharisees, and we're getting to the disciples who are saying, this is hard stuff. It's hard to accept. It's, you know, we've been going along pretty good where we could just get a divorce. We just kind of write her a certificate of divorce and walk away, and it's over. Verse 11, his answer. But he said to them, not all men can accept this statement, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born that way from their mother's womb, And there are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men, and there are also eunuchs who had made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. He who is able to accept this, let him accept it. In some current Church of Christ preaching and teaching on this passage, it's not a whole lot dissimilar from what the disciples were teaching, or excuse me, what the Pharisees and the men of the church at that time were teaching. Any reason works, or contrarily, this is what you have to do because this is what Jesus said. If you've been married and divorced, you become a Christian, you have to divorce that one and remarry your original one. And it says in this passage that if you go back to the original wife, you're committing adultery too. So, one thing's clear. When you come into the church, you start fresh from where you are at. You don't go back and try to undo your past sins, because if you had to undo every one of your past sins, you wouldn't get anything done. So, this isn't the one we just worry about. Okay? So, having tried to pull those two together, I probably didn't get it real clear, but there's slight differences in the passages there. And they were trying to trap him. They were trying to cause Jesus to get divided within the crowd. He didn't fall for that. He said, "What does the Bible say?" And he went to the Bible. When somebody asks you a question, is that your response? Let's look at the Bible. What does the Bible say? I appreciate Mr. Wilson's introduction, and just recently had the privilege of immersing some young ladies. I mean, they're newborns, right? Some young ladies into the church, and we're having some struggles. You see, they're all 70 and older. There's three of them, three sisters. They're the sweetest things you can imagine. But we're having some struggles because they had years and years and years and years, well, lots of years anyway, of Catholic teaching. And the family was all Catholic. And then they've had a lot of Baptist influence. And so when we read something that's a little difficult, including, you know, that you have to be immersed to be saved, we're working through Mr. Wilson's books is what I chose to use. Their niece, who's only 55, she's my age, you know. This younger woman says, you know, well, I had to admit it, you know, but it's only for another couple of weeks. And then we won't be the same age. Anyway, she says to me, "If this is true that you must be immersed to be saved, why aren't people shouting it from the street corners and hollering out to everybody?" I said, "I've done that." Yeah, actually, and when these lights kick on, that'll be good too. Because the older you get, the more light you need just to see what you're trying to do. I've hollered, and some of you who are familiar with where we met in the Wilsonville Motel 6, and I opened the window and I screamed out there at the people. You know, it didn't do any good, but I did it. And holler it from anywhere you want. Unfortunately, already, those poor ladies are wondering if we told them the truth. And thank the Lord, Mark was on the phone with his mom until 1 o'clock in the morning. And so she'd gone from following what we were teaching, excited about the teaching, really happy to see me and her sisters getting immersed in their tub right in their house. And to maybe you shouldn't come over anymore. And after that conversation, now it looks iffy. So pray for them. There's three of them. They're 70 plus. And then the niece, the young one in the group, is 55. So there's some things to do. Now, the topic, you know, Jay usually gives me the verses without quite the topic. And typically there's a, you know, here's what we're going to cover for the subject matter for the whole camp. But this time he said, here, in quotes, "Here's your topic, God's ideal marriage." So I've been fretting about this since the day I got that. What do I know about an ideal marriage? You know, I've had one, a marriage, and it's been extremely good, but I'm pretty sure that at least occasionally one of those two spouses has failed in doing their proper spousal behavior. Because I know I have. I'm just being honest, Judy, you know. Now, Jane hasn't failed. And you see, Because if I do understand the Scriptures correct about this, the picture is of Christ and His church. And He has forgiven the church and forgiven the church and forgiven the church. Just like He did Israel. Just like He did the Jews. Until He finally couldn't forgive them anymore. And then He divorced the Jews. He divorced Israel finally. They forced Him into that position because they had committed immorality. They had been adultering, fornicating. She's never done that. Is there any reason for me not to forgive her? And if I'm going to be Christ-like in my behavior, what she has been forgiven of, I've forgotten. And to tell the truth, I really don't remember much. There's a few things I have written down, but not much. Very, very little. Honestly, you know, you don't have two wonderful daughters get to be the wonderful daughters and wives that they are without their mother doing a fantastic job. So hats off to my wife. In the book of Revelation, though, we have the marriage of the Lamb has come. Now, that's the real God's ideal marriage, is His Son to His church. And when the Apostle John gives the prophetic utterance that he's recorded there, this is the final consummation of the church's wedding to Jesus, our groom. And I want to spend just a little bit of time in this session focused on the biblical marriage, because we are currently betrothed to Christ, right? And in the old Jewish traditions, betrothal and marriage are a lot different than they are today. It isn't quite the way it was today. I mean, the union began without the consummation of the union. They were together a lot. And it's a little different than today. In every aspect, that marriage relationship of Christ to the church, of us to our groom, is identical to the relationship that should apply to us. It should apply to Jerry and Jane, and Jay and Lana, and all of you who are married out there. Every one of you. So anything I have to say here is going to fit. In this, I'm going to talk about the fact that marriage is divinely established. It's no accident. And the fact that the courts and our leadership in the political arena don't really want to recognize marriage anymore, because clearly if God says it's between a man and a woman, which He does say, and the courts say it can be between two men and two women, one man married to another man and a woman married to another woman, I mean, they obviously don't think marriage means marriage. How far do you have to go with that? So it's divinely established. It will be marked by certain things. How are Jesus' disciples going to be known? You will know them by their love. How will you know a marriage? By its argument? By how much they look like each other after 35 years? No, you will know it by their love. A marriage will be fulfilling, and as a consequence of that fulfilling and that love, there will also be results. There will be children. And there will be so much spiritual symbolism as we go through this. I'll try to catch it as we go. And I'll try to deal with the Hebrew customs a little bit if the time permits. So let's start with the marriage relationship and what the Scripture gives us for that view that I want to work on. Divinely established. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, it would appear to me that God's first command might be one that would fit. You know, verse 28, and God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. That's a commandment, by the way. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth. I had about a three-hour layover in Seattle on my way up here. When was that? Yesterday. And so I wandered through the magazine racks just to see what kind of garbage is being printed today. And here's a National Geographic, and you read a few pages of it, and it's all about how we are destroying the earth. And if everybody is consumed as much as Americans, it takes 6.5 earths to support us for 1 year of what the earth can produce. What? Huh? What? What? We'd consume the whole thing 6 times in 1 year if everybody consumed as much as Americans. I'm not a math major. Well, that is some funky math. It just won't work. Because we've been doing it for more than 6 years and the earth's not gone. I can tell. The pit's pretty big, but it isn't sucked up. The whole earth hasn't fallen into the pit yet. So they're wrong again. Okay, Genesis chapter 2, God's created man first and then woman because, in verse 20 and through 24, chapter 2, verses 20 through 24, and the man gave names to all the cattle and to the birds of the sky and to every beast of the field, but for Adam there was not found a helper suitable for him. And I'm glad! Or Jane would be a cow! I like a woman. I think this has worked out really good. Nice job, Adam. So the Lord caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and he slept, and he took one of the ribs and closed up the flesh at that place. Well, she couldn't be a bird. She'd fly away. And the Lord God fashioned into a woman the rib which he had taken from the man and brought her to the man. And the man said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. For this cause, a man shall leave his father and his mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." So when Jesus says in the passage in Mark and Matthew at the beginning, when was he referring to? He's quoting this passage. He's referring to the beginning. Right at the start, this is the way it's supposed to be. And even when they didn't have fathers and mothers, they were supposed to leave them and cleave. That's a union that God has designed. I need a suitable helper. Adam needed a suitable helper. And any man worth his salt who hasn't determined to spend every waking moment working for the church also needs a helper. You just do. And these animals aren't going to do the trick. And some other guy isn't going to fulfill that need. It's not going to work. Do you have any doubts? Come on down to San Francisco. I'll take you around for a few minutes, and after we both throw up in the sidewalk, we can leave. And it won't take long. Probably don't have to go that far, but I've got them captive down there in San Francisco. We're going to drop those bridges. They'll be stuck right there. Okay. God's desire for a marriage is a unique covenantal commitment, excluding all others from its intimacy. Nobody else gets to be that tight. Nobody else gets to be that close. Exodus 20 and verse 14. Exodus 20 and verse 14. It says pretty simply one of those commandments, you shall not commit adultery. Right up there with honor your father and your mother. You shall not murder. Let's see. I'm not going to murder anybody, but it's okay if I have a divorce and go marry a new one, huh? Not so. Not acceptable. You're at that point, we'll help you to deal with it, but don't go there. You don't have to. God forbids us to break that covenant. He has made a special covenant, and He doesn't want it to be broken. Let's go to the New Testament. We covered it in Matthew 19. I won't read it. Verses 3 to 10. Jesus has covered it. He's quoting these passages. He's taking us back there. And anything further about divorce, I'll try to cover later. Verse 6 of that passage says they're one flesh. You know, I've used this example before from this platform. When there's a marriage relationship, it's a bonding. And, you know, in here we have some plywood. And an individual sheet of this plywood, this wood that's been stripped out like this, isn't very strong. If I jumped on it, I'd go right through. And fortunately, this is pretty thick and I don't go through. But it's because there's several layers laid together. And they're glued together and they're very, very strong. Have you ever seen it after a piece of plywood's been out and it's begun to weather and it begins to break apart and you can start and you can kind of pull the layers apart? Have you seen what it looks like? What do you see? What I see is this piece over here, as I pull this one off, has got chunks on it that go to this piece. And when I pull it a little further, this other piece has got chunks from that piece. When you take a marriage that's been brought together by God and glued together by God and you peel it apart, don't think for a moment that there isn't parts of the husband stuck to that wife forever. And there aren't parts of that wife stuck to that husband forever. So you don't break it clean. And then they go have another marriage, and that one isn't any better because, you know, it turns out that men are men. They're just the same pretty much as the last guy. Just took you a little longer to find out about this one than did the first one. So now you got to dump this one and go find another one. Eventually you'll find one you'll stick with because you'll be too old to keep going through this. And that's one of the things that age does to you. Once you get to a certain age, you don't want to put up with any more change. Don't change anything, even if it's bad. I like it this way. I can't handle any more change. It's one flesh. You can't pull it apart. If you do pull it apart, know for a fact that you're destroying both pieces and they're both going to be having chunks of the other person stuck to them forever. And then you put that into a new marriage situation, there's no way that that isn't going to have its impact. And then throw in the children, which was supposed to be one of the byproducts of a marriage, and now you're getting to a real mess. And it is no surprise that the things in America keep getting worse. You know, I don't know when it changed, but I can tell you that 30 years ago or so up on this pulpit, we wouldn't have said 67% of the marriages end up in divorce. It probably would have been about 35, 30, 40% maybe, high. When I was young, a divorced couple, everybody knew about it. On our block, somebody had gotten a divorce. You know, even when I was a little bit bigger than Peter, but Elliot's size, not much bigger than Elliot, to know that was kind of like taboo. You don't go near that house. There's things not right there. It wasn't really acceptable. And that's not that long ago. 50 years. That's not very long. If you don't believe me, wait till you're 50 or older. But honestly, that's how far we've come. And the more those divorce children's products of a divorce situation, the more those children with their multiple fathers, multiple sisters and brothers, the more of that goes on, the more acceptable it becomes and the worse it gets. You don't think make anything better by making it worse. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. The problem with most husbands is they don't understand what sacrifice means. And when you teach them, they ignore the teaching. Sacrifice means you're probably the first one up. It means you're probably the last one to bed. You're probably the one who's taking care of a lot of things. You're probably the one who's having to get that job done. You're probably the one who's going to have to keep the car running and all the stuff in the house. You're the one who's going to have to do all those things. That's what has to happen. So that she can do what she's supposed to do and she'd be happy to do those things for you. I testify to you that this next statement is true. Jane took care of Anna when she was a baby because she was nursing. And I wouldn't even wake up at night when Anna would awake and needed to be fed. That's something I couldn't take care of. Right? One night we were visiting some friends in Great Falls. Anna was sick in her crib at the end of the bed. Before Jane stirred, before she even knew there was anything going up, I was up taking care of Anna. It's instant. I heard different. My ears were on the whole time. My brain was on. I didn't know this, by the way. I didn't plan it. I didn't. If she ever gets sick, I'm going to jump up first. No, it comes natural. You're the husband. You're there. You're the protector. You're responsible. If a marriage fails, I think 98% of the time it's because the husbands are not willing to sacrifice. And maybe 98 is not the right number. Maybe it should be 99.8. Yes, we have scriptural evidence that the women fail too. But most of the time it's because the husband's a jerk. The biggest thing he has for a sacrifice is to only watch 5 football games this Sunday instead of his normal 6. That's America. That's America. They got it now, so if any team gets within the 20-yard line, you can get that on a different screen. Honey, there is no food in the house. I need to go to the store. You think it's terrible. That's common America. That's how Comcast and all these others make their money. They don't make their money off of the women. They make their money off the men. Football used to be one night a week, or one day a week. Sunday there'd be one game on, as I recall. Now it's on Monday night and Thursday night and Friday night and Saturday and Sunday. And around around Thanksgiving time, we get in extra games.
Well, isn't that wonderful?
Oh, it's a holiday. I can spend the whole holiday glued to the TV set. Yeah, if marriages fail, it's mostly the husband. So husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. If you don't love yourself, well, wait a minute. You're busy stuffing your face. You must love yourself. You got that television set with all those programs so you could love yourself. I know that this isn't really the audience that needs to hear this, but this is a real world that we face out there. You know, this is a world where somebody as sharp as Mark, who was up here a little bit ago, could go out and already within my organization, Mark would be a district manager for Safeway. Mark would be making over $100,000 a year plus bonus. And if I was really doing my job as a Safeway employee, I'd be trying to recruit him. Somebody that smart, that talented, that capable, can sing like that? We need them. But God would never forgive me. So you're just going to have to go without the extra money, Mark. And I know Mark knows that. He knows that. Verses 31 and 32, for this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is great, but I'm speaking with reference to Christ and the church. Now, seems to me that means that we are going to have to cleave to Christ. Well, that's a word we don't use a lot. You know, if we cleave something, it's chopping it with a cleaver. Well, that's not what we're talking about here. It's joining tightly together. Marriage is more than a contract for mutual benefit. Hey, let's get married. This will work out great. We can file joint taxes and save money. You know? No, that's not why you get married. It's not for mutual benefit. Marriage is so that you can give 100%. So that you can give 100%. Doesn't matter whether you're a female who heard that or whether you're a male that heard that. You both have to give 100%. Everything you have has to go into that marriage. You don't get to hold it back. I'm saving this part. That's what most people are doing. And the part they're saving for themselves, which means they don't love this other person as much as they love themselves, which means they shouldn't have got married in the first place because they're still a selfish pig. In some cases, some of these wives should pack up their husbands, haul them back to their parents and say, would you please finish raising this boy? Did you know that one of these ladies I was telling you about a minute ago got married at the age of 14? Hey, 14 and they could make it work. He was only 18 or 19, as I recall from what they've told me. You know, and they certainly couldn't get the parents to approve of a marriage at 14, and so they kind of had to do it on their own. But it lasted till he died. They understood the picture for marriage then. It wasn't what Hollywood sells today, but it was what was true then. They saw it all around them. Now, there are some things required for a good marriage. Let me mention a few of them. Wisdom, knowledge, discretion, just among the many. And so we need that stuff, right? We need to have that. And the best place that I can think of to get some of those things might be the Proverbs. Turn to Proverbs chapter 2. Proverbs chapter 2. And if we read all of it, we wouldn't read too much. But look at how it starts out. My son, if you will receive my sayings and treasure my commandments within you, make your ear attentive to wisdom. Incline your heart to understanding. For if you cry for discernment, lift your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures. Men, before you get married, start with some Proverbs. Pray about it. Read about it. Look at what you need. This is important stuff. Then you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. Do you need wisdom in a marriage? Yes. For from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice. He preserves the way of his godly ones. I could read the whole chapter.
I won't do that.
The important part is if. Do you desire these things? Is this important to you? Is a marriage that's going to last forever, be fruitful and grow? Then you're going to have to apply these things. I can't claim to have always had great wisdom in everything we had to face. And a lot of times, we'd never faced them before. You know? The day, I don't even remember exactly, forgive me please, the day I came home and Jane told me she was pregnant. I really don't remember it. Things became a blur and have stayed that way for the last 30 years. And it's pretty obvious that any brains I had left right into my kids. They're smart. And I seem to forget everything anymore. In fact, I forget which one gave me something for memory the other day. Anna gave me some pills. This will help your memory, Dad. Or Sarah did. Who did it? Sarah did it. Okay. Forgive me, Lord. Okay. Next attribute of a marriage is that it's going to be marked by love. Now, again, if you've gotten past the start here, you've gotten through the marriage and you've ended up in divorce, which is a common thing today, let us help you. Let the church help you. I can tell you, you will not find wisdom to help you anyplace else. I can tell you that wisdom is something that comes from God. And if you aren't coming from God, and if it comes to an upright man, if you don't go to somebody upright in the Lord, you're not going to get wisdom. Don't go someplace else looking for your answers. Come to the church. Your marriage needs to be marked by love. Back there in Genesis chapter 24, a very simple statement is made. And I think it kind of sets the stage for us as you think about it. You know, things done a little different there before all the formal ways we do things today or even later in time. But back then, you know, he needed a bride. Isaac needed a bride. And so Abraham sends off his servant and comes back. And look at here in verse 67 of chapter 24. This always struck me. Then Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and he took Rebekah, meaning having relationship, and she became his wife, and he loved her. Thus Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. And he loved her. And he loved her. That's the statement, but the evidence we see. If we're going to see a good marriage, we're going to see plenty of evidence of it. What happens to a man who doesn't treat his wife in an understanding way? What'd you say? You have to speak up. I'm old. Remember? Prayers are hindered. That important to anybody? Yeah. Why would God hinder your prayers if you aren't treating your wife in an understanding way? I would think that's really when he needs to zoom in and help you with those prayers. God, probably because you're selfish and you're praying the wrong prayers. Because if your prayers were about getting the marriage relationship right, God would help you with that. Living with your wife in an understanding way is so important that we had to be given it as a principle in Peter, in the book of Peter. Now, why would he have to go in and tell us that? Why should that be necessary? It's because men don't do it. All too often, men don't do it. You expect her to think like you think. She won't. Anybody who's not married? She won't. Anybody who is married? She won't. It's true. She doesn't think like you think. Guys, she won't think like you think. Wives, he's not going to think like you think. But he needs to be the one who's understanding. It's built into the wife to be that way. It's part of her nature. When we have this kind of love that's based on a true friendship and mutual respect, it'll seal and sustain the marriage. Do you have friendship in your marriage? Marriages need to have friendship. When I can't talk to anybody else, I can talk to Jane. She doesn't even have a hearing aid yet. So she doesn't turn it off. She still listens. Now, the problem is she usually comes back with some pretty good advice, but by that time, I'm not listening. And you know how important it is sometimes to just talk it out, just to get it out verbalized. You need somebody to talk to. You need that helper. Otherwise, we could have cows, remember? Way back there in Genesis, we could all have cows. Hey, there's my cow. I'm going to go talk to my cow. Yeah, that'll help. The other thing that a marriage that's based on love, when we have the kind of love that Christ had for the church, what does that do for the church? What does Christ's love do for the church? It helps to purify this relationship that we have with Him. If husbands, if we'll love our wives, it purifies our relationships as well. You want an ideal marriage? Let me suggest you love your wife. Huh? Love your wife. It's something you can do. It's something you can choose to do. And it's something you must choose to do. I've mentioned this a few times from up here as well. I don't know exactly how many times, but every night I write a note to my wife. It's a short note. Sometimes it's just a recap of the day. Sometimes it's a teasing note about how cold her feet are on my back. But I write her a note every day. It takes 3, 4, 5 minutes, something like that. Do you know those notes all fit in shoe boxes? You know those shoe boxes are starting to fill a shelf in the closet. It must mean something to her. She saves them all. I've never had her get a note and not read it 2 or 3 times right away. Now, you don't have to do what I do, but it worked for me. It helps me to think about my wife. One of the very last things I do before I go to bed that night is think about my wife. And I write a note and I tell her some of the things of the day or something that's on my mind or talk to her briefly about, you know, what's going on. You know how uncomfortable that is to write that note if I'm mad at her? I think we're in the 10-year range on these, that without a miss. By the way, I've had vertigo. Do you know what vertigo is? Anybody know what vertigo is? Vertigo is when the room spins and you throw up. You open your eyes and the room spins and you throw up. And that's the way it works, you know? Until the vertigo goes away, that's what happens. And it's an inner ear thing. Well, some of those times when I was supposed to be writing a note, I had vertigo. And every time I'd open my eyes, the room would spin and I'd puke. So it didn't work too good until I called my wife and said, "Hey, I'm going to dictate. You write." She's written, I think, 3 notes to herself. She's got a separate shoebox for her notes. No. One of the last things on my mind every night is my wife. Is that important to me? Do you know what I think about at night? What I dream about at night? I dream about my wife. What your mind's on, your mind continues to think about. You ever notice that? You're driving down the road, you're thinking about something. 200 miles later, you realize you've gone 200 miles, but you've been thinking about the same subject. Hey, you drove okay. I don't mean to imply you were a zombie or something like that. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying, though, is what your brain is working on, it keeps working on. What would you like to be thinking about last at night? Well, let's see. The Steelers were on the 12-yard line. Oh, who cares? You know, who cares? Oh, my bank account. Not taking it with you anyway. Especially now. I'd like to talk about the economy, too. Hey, think about your spouse last thing before going to bed. By the way, the rest of my time at night is spent in my written prayer time to my God. So if I think about one of two things at night, my relationship with my wife or my relationship with my God, it's amazing how much better I sleep than I used to. For what it's worth, you keep doing whatever you're doing that isn't working. And in those notes, I don't criticize her or rebuke her. I don't have a list of everything she did wrong today so she can keep it in a record. You know? Refer to note 12. Refer to note 111. Refer to, you know, pretty soon it'll be this big, long refer to old notes, you know. You've been bad again. You know, no. We have troubles. That's what we work out. When I'm sitting there, and I'll tell you, there was one night I was so mad to her, mad at her. I did write a nasty note. And I mean, I was critical of her. But I couldn't give her that. I couldn't. I wadded it up. Then I took it out and I ripped it up, in case you would find it. Then I took it out, ripped it up, and put it in different garbage cans. And the really bad parts I took to work and threw them away there. And she got a nice note. Maybe not quite as nice as some, but it was still a nice note. I'm not going to focus on what she does wrong. If I focus on what she does wrong, I'll never get to the point she does right. And I don't mean she's doing so much wrong, but I'll get hung up in the wrong spot. If you're thinking about what, if Christ was thinking about what we did wrong, we're all condemned and going to hell. If that's the way you feel about your spouse, maybe you would be better off divorced. No, that's not the answer. The answer is to repent and change. She might be better off without you. This isn't just for the men. Women, apply it as appropriate. I'm a man, though, so I think that way. God gave to us different roles, though, as men and women. Because He also needed to give us different abilities so everything would work together, right? You know, there's some things that Jesus can do I can't do. It's really true. I went to the hospital. I said hello to Sarah. I chased the kids. Talked to Davis for a couple minutes. We chased the kids. She talked. We went back in the room and then we took the kids. You know, if I could do what Jesus would do, she would have got out of there right then. Man, they closed the hospital. I could do that. I don't have some of those abilities. But the responsibilities that I have in a marriage relationship, He has in His relationship with us. And His responsibility to us is to sacrifice for us. And He did. We'll get to more of that. Did you ever notice that although we have different roles, there's some things we're supposed to do equally? You know, God did not put down women. I can't find that in the Scripture. Now, I haven't got it all memorized. Mr. Wilson, I don't know if you've got it all memorized yet or not. Now, he's hanging his head and saying no, you know. Yeah, he's got all the words memorized, just not the order they come out in. Okay. Have you ever read where women are lesser creatures? I haven't read it either. Anybody, you know, any other preachers in the audience here? Oh, Steve Eisnagel. You probably read it in one of those African translations. No, it's not there. Let me see. Somebody else pretty old in the group. Don't hide, Bill. Rick. In the Quran. Oh, maybe it's not inspired. Possible. In the Bible... In the Bible, who are you pointing at? Mike? Mike Harbour. What? Is he old? Or his Bible's written that way? No, I know his Bible's written the same way. It isn't in the Scripture. Women are equal to men. They've got different responsibilities and different jobs. Men, they're equal to us. And women, you're equal to your husbands. You're equal to any man. You have different responsibilities. In Genesis 1:28 that we read back there, who was supposed to rule over the fish and the earth and all that kind of stuff? It didn't say man, it said, and they. And they, together, done together. We need helpers to get it done, men. We need to admit it. And women, you need that man. Galatians 3:28, both. And in Colossians 3:10 and 11, both. Both men and women receive God's gift. If women are not worthy, then why does God bother to die for them? I mean, you could cut it off if they aren't worthy, you know. If the worthiness stops with the man, then we just cut it off and we don't have to die for the women. Maybe you'd only have to hang halfway on the cross. No, not the way it works. In Romans 4, I'm not reading these passages so we can move through. Romans 4, 18 through 21, we read about Abraham. In Romans, in Hebrews 11, 11, we have Sarah, his wife, listed as one of those of great faith. Huh? A woman? Not in my Hall of Fame. Oh, then fix your Hall of Fame. We'd do well to have the faith of Sarah. And Jane, don't go there. I mean, at 90, we're not going to have kids, okay? Notice in 1 Peter 3, 5 through 7, obey is the word, not submission. Excuse me. Let's go there. I don't want to misquote, so let's go there. I got my notes, but I don't have the verse memorized. 1 Peter 3, and we've talked about it a couple times. 1 Peter 3, 5 through 7. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. Submissive to their own husbands. Remember the difference between obedience and submissiveness. You know, you've certainly experienced it with children. And because one of my children is here, and the other one is ill and will get anything I say in many times, so I'm not going to say it. When we have to encourage the kids, the grandchildren, to do something, occasionally we get obedience. What Davis and Sarah strive very, very hard to do is to get submissiveness. What's the difference? Is there a difference between obedience and submissiveness? If you just want them to do it, you get that whip and you crack it hard enough and they will do it. If you want them to do it willingly, that's submissiveness. And you really need to train your children to do it submissively. In this case, in the scripture here that we're reading about, the women were submissive to their husbands. They did it willingly. They didn't just do it, they did it willingly. Thus, Sarah obeyed Abraham in a submissive way, calling him Lord, and you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. You husbands likewise live with your wives in an understanding way, as with a weaker vessel, since she is a woman, and grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. We covered that, but I wanted to make sure I'd read it. My wife and I have different degrees of responsibility and different degrees of abilities to go with those. Together, we can get a lot done. Singly, we'll get a lot less accomplished. Without Jane, I won't get half as much done. Without me, I'm pretty sure she won't get half as much done. You know, you all heard that Sarah's been sick and in the hospital. Well, fortunately, Grandma was here and she was kind of keeping an eye on the kids because Davis had to stay up at the hospital. You see, Lance is nursing and the hospital doesn't take any responsibility for Lance as a patient. Only Sarah. So somebody else had to take care of Lance and get him, even just to picking him up and giving him to his mom so he could nurse. Okay, so Davis needed to stay up there. Somebody had to be there. In fact, you came to Wednesday night, and I understand that Sarah kind of got chewed out after you were here for the assembly, or the Wednesday prayer meeting. Because if there was an emergency, they'll take care of Sarah because they're responsible for her, but they won't take care of her. I don't quite follow their thinking, but their obligation, their insurance-wise and those sorts of things, they didn't want to be responsible for the baby too. So Davis had to stay there. Grandma stayed with the kids. When my plane landed, you'd have thought this was the greatest thing that ever happened to Jane. She was tired. She needed some help. And we worked together. We had a great time with the kids. You did. In case you couldn't hear that, that was Elliot saying he had a great time. He's a smart boy. Moves way up there in that inheritance part. Okay. Different responsibilities, different abilities. There are things that I can't do for these kids. They just don't, it doesn't work. But I can tell you this, when they want to have some fun, they come to Grandpa because he picks them up, he flips them, he tosses them around, and we have fun, and we talk about things. Now, Grandma, unfortunately, doesn't have that same physical strength, and so she doesn't do those sorts of things. When she picks them up, it's usually to swat because she's got to get stuff done. Wait till your grandpa gets here. Then you can have fun. Not quite. She has fun with the kids. I don't mean to. You understand what I'm trying to say. Different responsibilities. Different responsibilities. There was plenty of times when oh, I got it. I got to take a second stop right here. Young parents, mothers, don't you dare say, wait till your dad gets home, then you're in trouble. Huh? Wait till your dad gets home and then make him into what? A jail warden? No, deal with it and get it on. Dad's got to know because he's responsible, but you take care of it. And dad's, you know, you got to take care of it when you see it too. Okay. Marriage is to be fulfilling. That was the third thing I was going to talk about. God makes a big point about the sexual union of married partners. It's all through the Scripture. God uses this phrase. He talks about relationships. We saw it in, back there in Genesis in chapter 4, 1. It talks about man had relations with his wife. And as a consequence of those relationships, babies were born. So we know what was going on. Okay? There's plenty of places. It was always an act of dignity. And that's the problem when he talks about adultery. That's no longer a dignified act. Why would anybody go chasing down a road with no dignity? You know, that's what the dogs do. That's what the creatures do. That's not what an intelligent, thinking human being is supposed to be doing. That's not right. You see, I'm taught that she's my reward. Why would you take your reward and not dignify it? What would be the common sense of that? Hey, I got this beautiful trophy. Throw it out. Maybe I can chase after something else. That other trophy is not the one that God gave to you. It's not the one that was designed for you. It's not the right trophy for you. You didn't win it. You didn't earn it. You don't deserve it. And you shouldn't have it. And wives, I said it before, if you think you're going to get a better husband the second go round, you're wrong. You're going to get a different husband. That's all. They don't get better. I could prove that, you know. How many marriages end up with a second divorce? How many of those divorces end up with a third one? I will use an example here. My father-in-law, his wife died. My wife's mother died when she was 5 years old. So he married another woman. Well, that didn't work too well. So he married another woman. That didn't work too well. So he married another woman. That didn't work too well. So he married another woman. Is that right? Did I get them all? Five wives. You know what he's doing today? And I'm not picking on my stepmother-in-law. Okay? He's gotten too old to keep going through it. He doesn't want to be alone. That's what happens. Do you think two, three, or four was any better than one? I mean, that's the problem, guys. It's not going to get better. That's the problem. Ladies, it's not going to get better. It's just going to get different. Proverbs chapter 5. Proverbs chapter 5, verses 15 through 19. Drink water from your own cistern and fresh water from your own well. And he's not talking about a hole in the ground. Should your springs be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be yours alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, in case you didn't think I knew what I was talking about. As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love. You know what I have done recently? And I think I'm kicked myself for not doing it sooner. Where I do my prayer time, where I write my note to my wife, there's now a picture on this little stand that my wife bought for me. And on that stand is a picture of her from 1986, I think it is. And I'm trying to remember the wife of my youth. I'm trying to make sure that the picture I keep plugged in here is the wife of my youth. I want to keep that freshness that I had. You know, we've been married for 34 years. And just like the church is getting commonplace, right? That's part of the problem with older Christians. It must be Sunday. We got to go to the assembly. It's Wednesday. Got to go to the assembly. What happened to the excitement of your youth? Isn't that what he talks about and choose the churches out for in the book of Revelation? Where's your first love? My first love's that same woman that I saw walking down the aisle at Safeway stores. It's true. Hey, I got a mental picture of how good she looked, and the aisle was nicely faced up. All the product was just like a... Hey, if Jay can meet his wife roping heifers, I can meet mine next to the pickle aisle. She was right between the pickles and the potatoes. Okay. Men, are you intoxicated with the love of your wife? Are you intoxicated with the love of your life? Does it fill you up? Is it so exciting? Is it so important? Is being with your wife so important to you? It's been a real hard thing for me as these last couple years when we've gotten to California and there's been needs that Jane has had to be gone for extended periods of time. Her father's been very sick. She's had to help her a little bit with between the back surgery and so forth and the babies and the Sarah having a C-section. All the things that have happened, you know, she's had to help a bit. And that's okay, and that's what we want to do. But I get lonely, and I miss my wife, and I get cranky, and I take it out on other people at work, which is okay. You know, if I get really bad, they'll fire me. No, I can't, so I can't get that bad, right? I want to be with Jane. I want to be with my wife. Have we got a perfect marriage? Have I got this ideal marriage? It's something I'm continuing to work on. I've only had 34 years. I haven't got it perfected yet. Who's been married longer than 34 years? How many years? 40. Got it perfected? But we're still working on it. Who else? 45. 45. Is it perfect? Pretty close. And the reality is that's true. You know? You always know where Mel and Judy are on something because they're together on it. They're working it together. I'm serious. We drove up to tonight. Mel's over there, and guess what he's doing? He's filling gopher holes. A few minutes later, there's Judy doing what you knew Judy would be doing. Mel was doing what you knew Mel would be doing. He'd be doing something productive, and Judy would be doing something with the people. They're the same. They stay the same, and they stay together. For 45 years. Anybody beat 45 years? See, we got something we can do together. I'm going to start filling gopher holes. In this aspect of being fulfilling, it's a duty to consummate. You know, nothing was to get in the way of this. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 20 and verse 7. Deuteronomy chapter 20 and verse 7, one of the laws that they lived on. And who is the man that is engaged to a woman and has not married her? Let him depart and return to his house, lest he die in the battle and another man marry her. He's supposed to finish this job. He's supposed to marry her. That's the intention God had. That was one of the laws of warfare. In Deuteronomy 24 and verse 5, when a man takes a new wife, he shall not go out with the army, nor be charged with any duty. He shall be free at home 1 year, and shall give happiness to his wife whom he has taken. They're supposed to consummate this marriage. There's nothing supposed to get in the way, not even the draft. Now, what happens in America? Now we got great pictures of women being carted off, leaving the kids crying in daddy's arms. Wonderful. We're really getting things fixed, aren't we? The women are just about totally equal with the men now. We're just about drug you down as far as we possibly can. But not yet. We got a new president. He's working on some new stuff. Yeah, not so funny. 1 Corinthians 7. Yeah, America has been very busy taking the women, the wife, the female, off the pedestal that God intended for us to keep her on. If your wife's not on a pedestal, men, put her back up there where she belongs. Let the husband fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise, this is 1 Corinthians 7, verse 3, let the husband fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does, and likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another, except by agreement, for a time that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again, lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control. But this I say by way of concession, not of command. Yet I wish that all men were even as I myself am. However, each man his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. You want to mess up a marriage, start playing around with that relationship. when you think you can, you know, get some sort of behavior out of your spouse by, you know, that kind of a behavior. I'm not going to get too more much more graphic. You're wrong. It just makes it worse. And women, you know, the picture that Hollywood presents is that, you know, oh, I have a headache. You know, don't go there. Don't go there. That's not the scriptural picture. You have a responsibility to each other, lest Satan get in there. How important is your spouse to you that you would let Satan get in? No, don't go there. In promiscuity and perversion, you know, that's just not supposed to happen. Paul tells us we are a temple of Christ, our body. Remember, this is in context of Christ to the church in 1 Corinthians 6:16-20. God demands holy lives in 1 Peter 1:15-16, including our sexual relationships. Of course, God required this of the Israelites too, but what happened? Read Leviticus chapter 18 and read Leviticus chapter 20, verses 10 through 21. All the perversions of Israel. How patient was God with Israel? Read the Old Testament and see how his spouse treated him. And he forgave her. And he forgave her. And he forgave her. And he forgave her. Unless we run out of time, he forgave her a whole lot of more times. Till finally he couldn't forgive her anymore. No matter what happens, you still don't have to divorce her. There's proper roles in this relationship to be fulfilling. God made suitable helper. He's designed everything perfectly. It works the way it's supposed to work. It's not supposed to be female and female. It's not supposed to be male and male. And I don't care what law they change in what state, it isn't going to change what God said. In Psalm 45, we have a beautiful picture of the wedding of a king. In Proverbs 31, anybody ever read that and thought about your spouse? Do you read Proverbs regularly? And I make it my practice to read through Proverbs once a month. So, you know, there's 1 through 31. There's several months that have 31 days. Works perfectly. You know, just read a chapter of Proverbs a day. Every end of the month, I'm reading about my wife. An awesome picture of an excellent wife, the church. Notice that that woman is not chattel. I didn't say cattle. I said chattel. She's not treated poorly. She's not a slave. She was even able to have economic skills. Recently trying to help a fellow who's in deep trouble in his marriage. I don't know if they're going to make it. And I tried to think of different things that maybe he could think of that were positive about his wife. I couldn't get a positive statement out about her, by the way, which maybe tells you something about why they're at the position they're at. But not going too deep into that, I will tell you, though, that when I talked about how about her economic... Oh, she's terrible. Help her. Teach her. Work with her. Love her. Oh no, she's terrible. I took the checkbook away. And punish her. That'll work. Always works, doesn't it? The best way to reform a criminal is to punish them. Punish, punish, punish. They always reform, don't they? Yeah. And check with some of those prisons we got going. Read the Song of Solomon, the picture of a young woman who remains pure even though the temptations come. And they are big temptations. They're the temptations that the king can offer. She stays pure. She waits for her groom. I said that marriage would be a spiritual symbol. Before I step on, here's something that's important. The way a boy sees his father is largely a product of the things his mother says and the way she feels about her husband. Or as a girl sees her mother, it's based on what her father says about her mother. If it's important to you that your children think highly of you, then speak highly of your spouse. Let no words of criticism come out. Not in public. They don't need that. Marriage is a spiritual symbol. It shows God's union to his people in Jeremiah 31, Isaiah 54. The Proverbs declared all of the unfaithfulness of Israel in Numbers, Judges, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Hosea. Proverbs declared that finally God had to divorce his unfaithful wife, Isaiah 50, verse 1, and in Jeremiah 3, 8. And finally, God called back to Israel and said, I want you to be faithful. But he wasn't talking about old Israel anymore. He was talking about the new Israel. And that was the church. That's the church. Now, are we or are we not going to be faithful? Are we going to delight in our bride? Is that going to be the most important thing we can do with any other physical person, any other human being? Is there any other human being going to be more important to you? God, Jesus, yes. Anybody else? No. And your spouse will honor that if you put God first. Your spouse will honor it. Your spouse will be honored by that as well. One of the marriage customs that they had, as you may recall, was there was a dowry for the bride. It was called the bride price. They were arranged well in advance, you know, and somebody had to pay a price. What was Jacob's price for Rachel? What price did Jacob pay for Rachel? 7 years of labor. You know, when I was in the marrying age back then many years ago and thinking about it, if somebody told me I was going to have to work for 7 years for him to get Jane, I might not have married her. I'm just being honest. If I knew what I know now, I would. Boy, that took some real commitment, didn't it? 7 years hard work for the wife, and he didn't get her. He got switched. He got Leah instead. Now, that wasn't very fair, but he had to serve another 3 years to get Leah, so, you know, he got them both. But that's a pretty expensive price for a bride. None of us have been asked to pay that much. In this ideal marriage, we don't have to pay that price. The most gruesome price I've ever heard of was what David was charged by Saul. That was pretty gruesome. You know, the foreskins from the Philistines? You got to go kill all those men and then you got to bring back the foreskins. That's a pretty gruesome price. He gladly went out to pay the price. You read about that in 1 Samuel. This bride price, though, does not mean that the wife, the bride, was sold. The woman was not sold to the husband. That's not what was being done there. What was being done there was making sure that there was a great realization of how valuable that bride was. How valuable is your bride? How valuable is your husband? The bride was extremely valuable. What was the greatest price ever paid for a bride? We all know it. The greatest price ever paid for a bride was when Jesus took all of our sins to the cross with him. What greater price could there be? And he did that while we didn't love him. You know that? He did that at the right time, but he did it when we didn't love him. As I read the scripture, he died alone. There were people watching, but pretty much they were staying hands away. I'm confident that his mother and the other women there were crying. I know that. Hey, but what about his disciples? How were they? No! Take me instead! No, in Garden of Gethsemane, they all ran away. Yeah, there was an ear whacked off. I know those things. They ran away. The person he was dying for didn't even know that she loved him. Couldn't understand the price. How great a price is the bride worth? The death on the cross of a man, right? No. The death on the cross of the Son of God. Of the Son of God. How great a price should we pay for our bride? We haven't been asked to do anything like any of these things. You know? Jane's father didn't ask a penny of me. I don't know what you had to give for Lana. No cash. Yeah. No. You pulled?
Yeah, we had to pull our resources to buy a wedding ring.
Yeah, they pulled their resources to buy a wedding ring. I don't remember how we got a ring, but Jane ordered them. Yeah, I paid for it. I think it was $112. I remember pretty well, you know. I worked a whole week for that ring. Actually, 2 weeks. You know, I didn't get paid very well in those days. You know, courtesy clerks are not highly paid. I was a little more than a courtesy clerk. We had to pay for our wedding. I assume whatever ceremony you had, you paid for it, yeah. Huh? Didn't have anything to give. I had nothing. I had absolutely nothing worthy of the bride that God gave me. I couldn't have afforded her. 7 years wouldn't have been enough. Honestly. I didn't know it at the time, but it wouldn't have been enough now that I do know. If I hadn't married her, I wouldn't have had my daughters. If I hadn't had my daughters, they wouldn't have married their husbands. If they hadn't married their husbands, I wouldn't have my grandkids. And Elliot thinks I'm fun. That's pretty important stuff. It really is. How much is the bride worth? How much are you worth? You're the bride. Are we going to stop committing adultery? Israel couldn't figure it out. I know. No, we're not doing that. We're not committing adultery. You go visit some other church of Christ and you will find out that they are committing adultery. Step by step by step, they're adulterating themselves. They adulterate the Word, and they step further and further away from the responsibilities they have as Christians, and they are not preaching and teaching the truth. And if that's not adultery, I don't know what is. Jay knows of a good friend of mine, Brian Hamilton. Great guy. Many of you met him. Went off to Bible college, came back, worked with the church in Slidell. After a while, he decided he had to go back up to Maryland. Went back up to Maryland. We were there for the wedding reception for Anna and Andy. And went to the assembly. And we got to watch Home Alone. You think I'm kidding? Home Alone, right? That was the sermon for the morning. Chunks of Home Alone. Do you hear me? Chunks of Home Alone. This is a guy that we thought pretty highly of. When we moved to Portland, Jay said, go over here to Duke Street Church of Christ. Duke Street combined with Central Christian Church. Go to Central Christian Church and take your earplugs, folks, because the music's turned up real loud. They got what's important, don't they? The show. I don't read in the scripture, entertain the bride. You know, Rock her to sleep until I come back again. Keep her happy. You know, and if it happens to be Super Bowl Sunday, maybe we don't even have to have the assembly in the evening. You know what I'm saying. Any of you guys who think you're really tough want to go out there and prove to the world that you can do it? Prove that you're ready to go take it on. You head on down there to California. You get this work started. There's 7 million people in the San Francisco Bay Area. There's 14 million living in Los Angeles. I haven't been able to find the church yet where we can in comfort go and either avoid the entertainment or being told, you know, divorce your first wife, go back to the second wife. You can't have, you can't eat food in a church building because it's. You can't have a school here because these things aren't part of the Word of God. Huh? What? And where we immerse children and all the rest, Steve. I'm getting a little bit on my soapbox, but the church has got a problem out there, and really the revolution's here, and we got to do the work. And if the bride doesn't want to do the work, that's the job. Remember. Bride gets some work, groom gets some work. We want the groom to do everything? Yeah, Lord, you do it all. I'll pray tonight. I got 11 minutes to spare. Football's over at such and such a time. I got this time, and then I go to bed because I got to get up in the morning and go to work. But, you know, Lord, I'll squeeze you in. I'll pray, and then you do the work. Bride's got responsibility too. There aren't going to be any children, and children in this case are more and more disciples, more and more people in the Word of God, more and more people in His church. That's the children. Are you going to have children and grandchildren? You can't have grandchildren until you have children. Are you preaching and teaching? Are you working with people, making sure they get immersed? Are you being the faithful bride that you're supposed to be? If not you, who? If not you, who? I love my grandchildren. They're neat. Wouldn't have been any if I hadn't had children. But the Lord working with me, I created with Jane, we created these young ladies who are beautiful young ladies. And then they had husbands and they've got children. You know, this is pretty good stuff. I love to play with my kids, my grandkids. Tears my heart out when something's wrong, when the kids hurt. What does it do to Jesus when His people hurt because nobody will help them, because nobody's paying attention, because nobody's taking care of them? How does He feel when He knows he's got one right over there that you can reach and you won't talk to him? He feels like that husband whose wife has said, I got a headache. You're not consummating the marriage. Consummate it. Preach, teach, and immerse. Continue to teach. Make a beautiful bride. In the debate, all those years ago, Chuck took offense to the idea that we had to do something to be saved. But I read, and Jay answered with this verse, that the bride has made herself ready. Some onus is placed on the bride. It's not all the husband. It's not always just the husband. But let's be a faithful bride. Thank you.